ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनुमपि शचिपुत्रमत्र स्वरूपं रूपं तस्याग्रजमुर्भुरीं माधुरीं गोष्ठवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशाम् प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितः कृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनतन्वितं तं सजीवं संजीव साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्ण चैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्वितांश्च। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Yesterday I was talking about determination. Some more points about that. Those who take to study in adult life after leaving school, college, working for some time, they often find it very difficult to get back into that studious mode. It's easier when you're young. So one thing, while you're young, take advantage and study. It will be useful. I myself didn't follow that when I was young. I used to read books as things I liked to read, but mostly the subjects at school, I didn't like them and I wasn't interested in them and I hated school. Anyway, that's something else. but just using this as an example that often people, they leave school early and then they go and get a job and then they go back to study with the idea that studying will help them in their ongoing life. And such students are usually determined because they know the value of what they're doing. They're already convinced of the value of what they were doing. I wasn't a good student at school because I wasn't convinced of the value of what I was doing, although others tried to convince me about it. In this regard, talking about one school has been opened recently in Vrindavan for ISKCON devotees to study Sanskrit and the writings of the Goswamis. The students, they're not able to take, they're complaining, it's too much, 6 hours a day is too much study. And so they're taking less study. They went there to study, but they're complaining, it's too much. And those who take up this study of Sanskrit, many devotees think, well, I'd like to know Sanskrit when they're older, but they find it's very difficult to do. It's tedious, boring to study unless you have some innate love for Vyakaranam, Sanskrit grammar and vibhaktis and sandhis and samasas and all this kind of thing. Otherwise, it's boring just to study. But then, how are you going to maintain the determination? If you say, well, when I've done this, I'll be able to read Bhagavad Gita, and with some more study, I could go Bhagavatam in the original. Of course, we have it in translation, but there is a difference. I didn't study Sanskrit in youth. I studied Bengali, and there's a difference, I know, from reading the translations of the Vaishnava songs, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Narottam, and so many other songs, and understanding them in the original Bengali. So, determination. One will maintain the determination even when what we're doing is not immediately pleasing, when we realize that there's something that what I'm going to get out of it is well worth it. And if we're not convinced of that, we won't sustain, or even if we are theoretically convinced, we may not sustain due to not having that yogena vyapicha charinya dhriti, the determination which is sustained by yoga practice. It's a matter of shreyas and prayas, as is discussed in Kathopanishad, I believe. That which is immediately pleasing and that which, well, prayas is that which is immediately pleasing, and shreyaha is that which is not immediately pleasing but is beneficial in the long term. So there's some more discussion about determination. Another point about determination is, if you're going to excel in something, you're going to have to push yourself. Others may push you to do the job properly or to study properly or whatever, but they're not going to go on and on and on and on pushing you if you don't have your own internal motivation. So it has to come from you. And that will come from whatever it is. That will come from inner conviction, and in our case of serving Krishna, we want to serve Krishna. And then how will the motivation to serve Krishna in the best way possible? Actually, that's what serving Krishna means, to serve him in the best way possible. It doesn't mean to do perfunctory service. It means just as a formality. Actually, living in the ashram, that's another whole topic, but it's meant for those who are atmanikshepa. They've thrown themselves at Krishna. They've jumped out of the frying pan and into Vaikuntha, not into the fire. They've jumped out of the frying pan of material life. That example is given in the Yaksha Prashna, is it not? The whole world is like a big frying pan. We're all getting fried in the big frying pan of material existence. So Vaikuntha means serving to our full capacity, to our best capacity. People have different capacities. So that also in this third verse of the Sri Upadeshamrita, which discusses the various points which bring activities to full success, well, specifically bhakti, pure devotional service to full success. One of them is sangha tyaga. So our determination will be weakened, it will tend to be weakened if we mix with people of a different conviction and different determination. If we want to be a teetotaler, there's no use associating with drunkards. It won't help us to remain a teetotaler. And most likely, because human nature tends to be like that, we'll succumb to their influence and also start drinking. So one should associate with people of like mind. Srila Prabhupada gives the example in his Nectar of Instruction, purports. And just like there is a chamber of commerce for businessmen, they come together and discuss so many issues which are of mutual interest. They may meet each other and decide to do some business mutually together, or learn how to get around certain tax laws, or they may decide, come together and decide that we don't want those Hare Krishnas chanting in the streets where we have our shops, it's disturbing our business. They may, matters of mutual interest. Or maybe they say, well, it's good the Hare Krishnas are chanting because then it brings more people. Ah, that's a better way to put it. It's a good tourist. It was a funny thing in London, they used to show in the tourist advertisements, come to London. I was living just outside London. And one of the things they show four or five pictures, Big Ben and changing of the guard, and one of them is the Hare Krishna devotees chanting. But then I joined the Hare Krishnas, and every time you go out chanting, many times they arrest you for chanting. For the crime of chanting Hare Krishna. They don't do that anymore. Maybe during the lockdown they would. Otherwise, they gave up or they changed their minds or whatever. So associating with like-minded people, if you want to do something really good for Krishna, then we should associate with devotees of the same mentality. Someone told me, someone had told him he was expressing to devotees he wanted to join one temple in India in the Brahmachari ashram, and he saw some older Brahmachari in that temple and said, you really want to join? He was discouraging him. He said, yeah, well, you can if you want. You see, now I'm a senior devotee. I've got a comfortable room with air conditioning. It's not the most inspiring. If you want to join, you want to give your life to Krishna, and someone's saying, someone who should be, you'd think would encourage you, discourages you. That is not a unique instance of such things happening. So we want to associate with those who can help us in our determination. If we're writing Vaishnava literature, it's often not appreciated. I had that experience when I was first writing. I mean, spending hours and hours, day after day, not doing anything. It seems to persons who didn't know what I'm doing, just sitting in a room and wanting to do something. And I got that feeling from others. Wanting to do something practical. And then after I wrote a few books, then devotees started to understand, oh, actually, he's writing his books, okay. So the determination has to come from yourself, but that will be bolstered by associating with persons of similar mentality, or who at least have some appreciation. And people are going to discourage us. We want to avoid that association, especially in devotional service. It is stated here that if we can be free of all bad association, that will be one of the factors which will bring our devotional service to full perfection. Oh, full perfection. Oh. Writers, watch out. Perfection, if it's less than full, it's not perfection. Right? Anyway, the term is there, prasiddhyati. In Sanskrit we have, dukkha, dukkhatara, dukkhataram. Distress. Why am I using all these negative examples? Okay, sukha, more happiness, sukha, then more happiness, and then full, topmost happiness. So there may be levels of perfection. We are someone that they're just coming to Krishna consciousness. Oh, how many rounds are you chanting every day? 3 rounds every day. Oh, very good. Then you meet them after 1 year. How many rounds are you chanting every day? 3 rounds. What? You should have. At one stage, 3 rounds is very good. A year later, it should have increased. So there may be levels of perfection also. But strictly speaking, the English word perfection, you can't. You shouldn't really say full perfection. And this is the kind of thing that Robert Graves will get on, look over your shoulder and tell you all about. I'll come to him in a minute. So determination, utsaha nisya dharyat, dharyat, patience. The next is tat tat karma pravartanat, which for the sake of this discussion, we can say this means doing things the way they should be done. There are certain ways of doing things. You can't just imagine how to do things. If you want to be a lawyer, you have to study law and you have to follow, you have to know the law, and you can't, in the law court, you can't say, well, I disagree with this law. You can argue on the basis of the law, but you can't disagree with it. And you have to follow the procedures in the law court. There are many procedures. For instance, if a lawyer goes in dressed in a clown outfit, he'll be told by the judge to get out of the court. And there's a certain language one has to use. Apart from the technical language, there's the honorific language that one has to use. One has to refer to the defendant, for instance, rather than saying the name. And this is in English law, which is pervading in India also. So there are procedures for doing that. Now we may say, well, writing is more creative. There aren't, especially in English, there aren't that many laws, it would seem. In Sanskrit, definitely there are many rules which you have to follow, otherwise it doesn't make sense. Well, that's true in English also. There are rules of grammar, punctuation, syntax, and so on, but they're more flexible. But still, one should know the basics. If one wants to be a piano maestro, first of all, one should and learn how to play in such a way that you can just sit down and play anything that comes in your mind and improvise. But improvise, the idea is that you know the basics and then you do extemporaneously. Then you can do it. But there's one has to have a sense of pitch, and key, and tal, loy, all these different things, rhythm. Otherwise, if you think, well, someone sat down and they just played without any, without reading, without any music, what's that called? The reading, the music, they just sat down and played. So I'll do also. You might pass as some kind of avant-garde pianist, but it's not going to work. Over it. So similarly, there are rules for writing. In Sanskrit, they're very much delineated. In English, there are certain things which one should know. For instance, spelling. There are spell checkers now in computers, but they don't catch everything. For instance, it's increasingly common, even among people who should know better, to use the spelling L-O-O-S-E when one should use the spelling L-O-S-E. Loose is an antonym of tight. And L-O-S-E is an antonym of win. They have completely different meanings. Maybe because lose, it's the O in there is pronounced similar to, well, the double O, that's another problem with English, but the double O in English is not always pronounced the same way, but the way the word lose, L-O-S-E, is pronounced sounds more like it should have a double O in there, but it doesn't. So one should know basics. But there are common mistakes. For instance, the two words discrete and discrete, discrete and discreet, which have quite different meanings, but they sound the same, and it's common to mix up the two usages of them. One means distinct and individual and distinct, and the other means to be careful. That's a rough meaning. So there are some basic things one should know. The most useful book for knowing the basics of good writing is called The Elements of Style by Strunk and White. It's so well known. It was, I believe the first edition came out over 100 years ago, and it's still in print, and not only in print, but to the extent, I'll tell a little anecdote here. Some years ago, maybe 15 years ago, I didn't have a copy with me. I wanted to get a copy. I wanted to consult a copy. This, it must be on the internet now, but in those days it wasn't, or I wasn't aware of that. I wanted to get a copy of this book. Small book. So I was in Chicago. We were going on Harinam downtown, and then we're just opposite a big bookshop, major bookshop. I guess every intellectually minded person in Chicago would know the name of that shop. So I walked in, and I just couldn't remember the name of the book. Skip my memory. So, but I remember the name of the author, Strunk. So I asked a shop assistant, I'd like a copy of Strunk and White immediately. It's so well known, at least in bookshops, a reputable bookshop. It has its critics, but still, it's considered useful enough that you can see it's so well known that in a bookshop, if you just ask for it, the assistant will immediately point you, it's over there. So some advice from that book. It's a small, actually a very small, thin book, which is in accord with its overall message, which is, well, one of the prime principles it teaches. Now, this is tat tat karma pravartana, doing things properly, and I'm giving the example of writing Vaishnav literature. So writing Vaishnav literature has many things in common with writing anything. Writing a letter, writing an advertisement, it's communication via the medium of the written word. And it may be accompanied by pictures and other things also. But we're talking about the writing part. So one of the messages of the Strunk and White is omit needless words. Make every word count. If it's not needed, leave it out. Use the active voice, or just use active voice if you want to leave out the word there. Cut words. But I don't necessarily agree with everything, because I'm seeing it's the age of SMSs and WhatsApp messages are influencing the English language. So the articles such as the and a get left out. So now everyone's using Indian English all over the world, but it's less precise. Just like here in India, devotees often, when they're saying the Jai Dhwani, they say, all glories to assembled devotees. And in Indian English, that's fine. But it should be all glories to the assembled devotees. Because if you say all glories to assembled devotees, it means any devotees who assembled anywhere in the universe. But if you say the assembled devotees, it specifically means the ones who are here right now. So there's a lot of difference. It's understood, if you say all glories to assembled devotees, if anyone's thinking about it and not just mumbling as a matter of formality, it's understood, but it's incorrect. And if you put in writing, the capacity for misunderstanding due to not making oneself clear, is another point Strunk and White emphasize, is immense. Murphy's Law for writing. If anything can be understood, it will be. Murphy's Law. If things can go wrong, they will go wrong. Once Umapati Swami, I showed him something I'd written. He took it away, came back 10 minutes later, and gave it back with about 30% of the words cut out. And he edited on the spot. It was about one page. Cut it to pieces. Knife job. Well, that comes under omit needless words, making things clear. And then he told me, Umapati Swami, I believe he quoted G.K. Chesterton. He said, you have to write in such a way that the thoughts... You're driving the thoughts. He said it's like driving sheep. You won't see this in this country. Maybe in Dalmatia you'd see driving sheep down a country road. And the country road has, I guess in Dalmatia, will have stone walls. Or in England may have stone walls, depends which part of the country, may have hedge. You have to drive them. You have to drive, it's like driving sheep. And if there's a little hole in the wall, the sheep will go through it. Right? You've seen it. In this country, I don't think so. Because the roads are usually open, and you have to have usually two people if there are many sheep and goats, at least two to keep them all going in the same general direction. So if there's any way that the words can be misunderstood, they will be misunderstood. The thought of the reader will go off the track that you want to send them in. So this is standard advice for writers. I'm not really giving a writing class here, but I'm just saying that there are things which you can learn from standard authorities if you want to write and be clear. It happens many times to me in email. I usually email you, put it down, and then you get another email, and what does that mean, and this and that. Although they misunderstood. And I've misunderstood also. Actually, that happened with Devananda Pandit, remember him years? He wrote in an email, I chant my rounds in the morning up to 7. And I wrote back and said, what? Why only 7? And then he meant up to 7 o'clock in the morning. And then he lost faith in me because he thought I should be omniscient. He wasn't clear in his writing. But to him, up to 7, of course it means up to 7 o'clock in the morning. Right? That's what he thought. How could you think anything else? He never thought anything else. But then I read it, up to 7. He didn't say 7 o'clock. He just said 7. I chant my rounds up to 7. So there's a practical example. Use the active voice. One can read many books if one wishes to learn things. Read many books to learn many things. There's a difference. Omitness was prefer the standard to the offbeat. And this generally is using simple words to obscure words. Now, I don't always do that, especially when I was writing Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. I deliberately use all kinds of obscure words in an attempt to follow his arcane style of presentation. Arcane is an obscured word. Obscure in the sense that most people don't know what it means. Even probably most native English speakers don't know what it means. It means obscure. And it has its own nuances also. Nuance, do you know what the word means? It's a very useful word if we're studying philosophy, which we do a lot. And if for writing, the word nuance is very important because nuance means the subtle shades. So the different words. If you use a thesaurus, which is very useful in writing, because it's another thing, you don't want to use the same word over and over again. But then there are considerations also. You don't want to just use another word and then it becomes unclear. I spoke to Mr. Wilson. My father-in-law replied. Now, Mr. Wilson is my father-in-law, but I don't want to say Mr. Wilson. In this case, you could say he. Let's say, I spoke to Mr. Wilson. He replied in a manner that I had never expected from my father-in-law. Well, that is a possible usage. So anyway, there are so many nuances in writing. So prefer this. The point is, it should be clear. Don't use words just to show off that you know so many words. But often the nuanced usages are very useful. But at the same time, you have to think, what is your? That's another major point in writing. You should think, who are you? Who do you expect to read this? Who do you want to read this? If you're going to write about how the structure of benzene was discovered for a Back to Godhead article, you can find one Back to Godhead article by Sadar Puta Prabhu in which he discusses how the structure of benzene was discovered. So it's for a general, fairly intellectual audience. So he does it simply. If he had presented it for an audience of trained chemists, undoubtedly he would have presented it in a much more technical way. So we have to consider our audience. One of the glories of Srila Prabhupada's books is that they're suitable for laymen, or lay persons, I guess we have to say, nowadays. And scholars. And for practicing devotees. But anyway, this, you get some idea. This is the kind of advice that you get. Here's, okay, I'll read something from 1918 from Strunk and White. Vigorous writing is concise. Whew, that was a great example of vigorous writing being concise. A sentence should contain no unnecessary words, a paragraph no unnecessary sentences, for the same reason that a drawing should have no unnecessary lines and a machine no unnecessary parts. That example of the machine really hits home, doesn't it? This requires not that the writer makes all his sentences short or that he avoid all detail and treat his subject only in outline, but that he make every word tell. And it's very interesting that this paragraph started, vigorous writing is concise. A concise sentence. And then this requires not that the writing make all his sentences short, and the sentence goes on, and it's not short, but every word tell. You all know that Jayadvaita Swami is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Who else is he a disciple of? Strunk and White. He's the... excuse me, Maharaj. He, to me, is the living personification of vigorous, concise writing, making all words tell, very clear, and really nothing unnecessary, cutting to the bone in his analysis of everything. Cutting to the bone. I hope you know what that meant. That's using an idiom. Be careful about using... In my writing, I hardly use idioms at all. Because considering an international audience of many devotees who are not familiar with English idioms, and they get completely thrown off. If I say, Jayadvaita Swami cuts to the bone. Really? No, we never have to write it. Write it. See, Bhaktivikasa Swami said, he should know, put it on the internet immediately. So the point is that there are certain guides for writing. These talks would be about specifically about Vaishnav literature, but I hardly spoke anything about Vaishnav literature directly. So I'm getting now. This isn't about Vaishnav literature. This is about any writing whatsoever. But it's the same thing. If you're going to cook chapatis for Krishna, you're not going to say, well, these are for Krishna, so it has to be something different. No, it should be like the typical UP Khana chapatis. Or you can do Punjabi or whatever. There are varieties, but the average housewife in UP does perfect chapati. Actually, not nowadays, because they buy atta in a packet. But they used to grind at home, fresh every day. Actually, the best yogurt, and then they used to be better. The wheat used to be better before all this breeding of all this, and then people would grind it on the stone, fresh every day, and then cook it over wood or. Best is this gobar, cow dung patties. And anyway, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Another English saying. Stick to the standard system. Another book that I found very useful, there are hundreds of books on writing. The two books that I found very useful and there may be differences of opinion, was a book called The Reader Over Your Shoulder by Robert Graves. And it's a real eye-opener how he's demonstrating this principle of sheep going off, giving dozens of examples from reputed writers in reputed journals, how they write things which are not as clear as any, all kinds of big people, big journalists, and then he does himself also, one of his own writings, that, oops, I also did it. So very, very helpful, and especially after while I was going through that book and writing, I felt he was over my shoulder, looking at, because, oh yeah, that's right. Very, very, very careful in your writings to get it just right. Isaac Newton is often quoted as having said that if I have seen further than others, it is by standing on the shoulders of greats. Now, our analogy is somewhat different, that we go to the feet of those who are great. But the idea is sadhu marganu gamanam, follow the path given by the previous great personalities in any line. And then there may be some individuality. This Google, I'm not sure if it still is, but the Google company has as its motto for its staff, especially, I mean, maybe not the cleaning staff, but for those who are Googling up their brains to come up with different things all the time, because you have to be ahead of the competition, think different, which is wrong English grammar, by the way. Should be think differently. But think different. But before you think different, you have to be able to think in the standard way. There are standard ways of doing computer programming. So the end result, you may want it to be something new and different. That was the one of the great charms of Apple while Steve Jobs was alive. He was always coming up with new ideas which revolutionized the market. He was always thinking of new things. But the basics you have to know. You have to know basic programming before you... The end result may be different. But before you think outside the box, you have to know what's inside the box. Srila Prabhupada, one of the reasons he was able to be successful was because he thought differently. He was able to do things which others couldn't imagine doing. For instance, living among hippies and drunks. Now, how are you going to spread Krishna consciousness among hippies? You have to go to the intellectual class. Actually, they were thoughtful, but very, very fallen in their behavior, generally speaking. But he was able to do things... He was able to maintain his standards and keep his eye on the goal, start with the end in mind, and by the power of his conviction and his personality to steer those who came to him in the way that he wanted. He didn't become one of them, like many of the Swamis who came from India. They became influenced by their followers or by the whole atmosphere. Srila Prabhupada wasn't. he was able to think differently. There's the whole discussion of details and principles. Himself, he gave an example how he was able, one reason he was able to do what he was able to do and others didn't. And later so many Gaurya Vaishnava Swamis came to the West. And they must have thought, yeah, it's here you go and you preach and there are so many devotees and You say, I'm better than Prabhupada. You say, I'm giving something higher. But they couldn't have been the first one to go. They weren't even thinking of it. Srila Prabhupada gave an example in this regard. Maybe an apocryphal story. Maybe it's true. Christopher Columbus, having returned from America, having discovered America, so they say. He returned to the court of the King and Queen of Portugal, I believe it was. Was it? Anyone know? And you say, and others said, well, anyone could have done that. You see, you just say, you sailed, and you luckily hit America. Anyone could have done that. Theoretically, yes. So what's so great about you getting all this adulation? So Christopher Columbus said, I'll show you. He brought a plate with an egg, hen's egg, presumably. Generally when we say egg, we mean hen's egg. So he asked his detractors to stand this egg up on the plate vertically. They all tried. They all failed. Are you going to stand an egg on a plate vertically? It'll fall over. I guess maybe he hard-boiled the egg first so it didn't smash. And that was the trick. So he said, I'll show you. So he took the lower end, or the there's a word for that which I don't know, the broader end, and just holding it vertically, tapped it slightly on the plate so that it cracked and the bottom became flat, and stood it up. And everyone said, well, anyone could have done that. Yes. So theoretically, anyone could have done what Prabhupada did, but he did it. And now others can do it also. He showed the way, how it could be done. So creative thinking, actually in poetry, in English poetry, you don't have to follow any rules, theoretically. But still, if you bodge up all your spelling, it doesn't make for good writing, because when people are reading, they don't want to have to guess what you mean, or to notice that you've made spelling mistakes. It's words are the medium for conveying ideas, concepts. So tat tat karma pavartanat. In any line, you have to know your subject. Now, one thing is you have to know how to write. And it's not that every great writer had training in writing. There were many great writers before Strunk and White made their book. And probably none of them had any training. For sure, William Shakespeare had no training in spelling. And he didn't make any spelling mistakes, because there was no concept of correct spelling at the time. If you could find any original works of Shakespeare, you wouldn't be able to understand them. And apart from the fact that language has changed, the spelling conventions have been standardized, and even some of the letters were written differently at that time to the way they are now in English. So, true, there are so many great writers, there are many great English writers in the 19th century before Strunk and White and prior to that. But even without studying Strunk and White or going to, or without, well, I don't know what, oh, I shouldn't presume. they became accomplished writers to the extent that they're still read and appreciated now. Their writing is so good. But what analysts of the English language, like Strunk and White, do, they analyze good writing, and they find the what good writers all have in common, and they make it available to us. So it's just like, if you want to become a physicist to the level of Einstein, you could start off with just an introductory education in physics, but you're hardly likely or Einstein himself was not very much educated academically. But it would be much more realistic to get a standard education. If one thinks that I'll get a Nobel Prize, I'm going to get a Nobel Prize, then you should go to school, go to college, you want to get a Nobel Prize in physics, then you have to go to you have to study, you have to do your MSc, PhD. PhD means under guidance, you do it. And then you may become. Otherwise you could say, well, I'll get an honorary degree. I'll do my own private research and get an honorary degree. Unlikely. So it's better to follow the path of those who have already, they already know what should be done, and they can help us. Now this Sangha Tyaga, giving up bad association, well, doesn't that militate against learning from Robert Graves or Strunk or White? We want to give up in bhakti we want to give up bad association. That means association of non-devotees. If we want to write Vaishnava literature, it's helpful to study from people who are non-devotees. So the two principles are opposed. Well, to give an example, if you want to learn to grow nice roses for Krishna, it would be a good idea to learn from an experienced gardener, whether he's a devotee or not. If someone's an expert gardener or expert horticulturalist specializing in growing roses, it would be a good idea to take advice from him if you want to grow roses for Krishna. Maybe you could learn, but you could immediately learn so many things if you go to someone who already knows. And he may make some snide remarks about you being a Hare Krishna. You just have to ignore that if he does. And learn from him. Now, learning about writing could be more problematic. Learning from non-devotees. Because writing, after all, is conveying ideas. We have to be careful who we read, the authors, what we read. Mayavada bhasha shunle hoi sarvanash. Jibe nishta lagi sutra koilo beas. Vyasadeva made the Vedanta Sutras for the sake of delivering the conditioned souls from material existence. But if one hears the Mayavad commentary on that, then all one's endeavors will be completely ruined. So both are writing, Vedanta Sutras and the Mayavadi commentaries, beginning with, at least extant in the world at the present time, beginning with Shariraka Bhasha. So we have to be careful what we read and who we hear from. And learning about writing means people's ideas, their values, they may even subtly enter our minds. I just had a thought which is not really related to this. But our devotees who are attempting to interact with scientists, Bhaktivedanta Institute, when they go to meet, say they go to a scientific conference, they go in the kind of dress which is accepted by to be normal and acceptable in such a conference, which may mean a suit and tie or fairly, at least fairly neat casual clothes. They don't go in their devotee clothes. If they went in the went in what we call devotee clothes, no one would take them seriously. That's not very scientific. If what you say is in accord with science, then it should be accepted however you dress. But you see, in science there are also social conventions. It's understood that if you dress in a certain way, you identify with the conventions that we ascribe to, which means we're science is an acceptable part of the respectable society, what they consider to be respectable and normal. And if you want to be part of us, it's socio-psychology, not science. If Ravi Gomatam has something to say, interpretation of Einstein's relativity theory or whatever, he should be able to say it in any dress, or no dress. There's also one kind of dress. It's called the birthday suit. He should be able to say it in any kind of dress. But because scientists are human beings, as Thomas Kuhn importantly pointed out, if you want to get into the philosophy of science, which Ravi Gomatam, he has to use that name, not Rasa Ranjadas does do, then you have to, even to be accepted, you have to use that kind of dress. Otherwise it won't be accepted. So in the same way, it's unless one becomes so outstanding that he is accepted on his own terms, then if you're moving in a certain field, then you should follow the conventions of that field. Otherwise no one's going to listen to you. So the same thing in English. If you want to write Vaishnava literature which is communicating important ideas to intelligent people, that's the idea, to thoughtful people, if they're all full of spelling mistakes, generally speaking, and I'll say myself also, that if you see many spelling mistakes, you don't take it very seriously, because you think the person doesn't even know how to spell properly, then you're supposed to learn that in the beginning of your education. If you can't even spell properly, then what have you got to say to me? So association, yeah, we have to be careful. We have to be careful, but at the same time, just like associating with a gardener to learn how to grow roses for Krishna. So we may take help from non-devotee scholars who can help us to understand the basic principles of writing which we can adopt in our life, in our writing. Life, yeah, if you're going to write for Krishna, it can be a part-time thing, but if you really want to get into it and write something of value, then we see Six Goswamis of Vrindavan, what are they most remembered for? Hey Radhe, Raja Devike, Jalalite, Hey Nanda Sunakuta, Sri Govardhana Kalpapada Patale. What's the next line? Kalindi Vanye Kutaha, Goshantaviti Saravata, Vrajapure, Kedar Mahavivalo, Vande Rupa Sanatano, Raghu Yago, Sri Jiva Gopalako. So they were running here and there in Vrindavan, calling out in distress, "Hey Radhe, hey Lalite, hey Rajasuma." So that they did that, and they're known for that up to the present day among their followers. But then what they're particularly known for, even among the broader broader intellectual world, and the reason that they are known, and there's after them there are so many who are, even up to the present day, they're running here and there in Vrindavan calling out, "Hey Radhe, hey Vraja Devi." There are so many who are doing this, but they are known because Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sadharma Samsthapako Lokanam Hitakari Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanyakara. Because they very scrutinizingly studied all the scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all mankind out of their compassion. And they did that. And they wrote many books. They're remembered for that. That is their contribution. And that was their main engagement for which they're remembered. So if we're going to get into Vaishnava writing, we have to get it in. We have to get into it deeply. And sato vritte tat tat karma pravartanat, doing things in the proper way, following the previous acharyas. Sato vritte Srila Prabhupada translates as following the path of the previous great acharyas, which is similar to tat tat karma pravartanat, doing things properly. So reading about how to write is not our main subject for reading, but what is the content? That means we have to know the subject. What is Vaishnavism? We're going to have to know that. We're going to have to read a lot. Writers are going to have to read a lot. Reading and writing, it's like Shravan and Kirtan. You have to read a lot, and read and go deeply and try to understand, and then you can produce it. And if you're going to Vaishnava literature, what are we going to do? There's so much already, but so much more is needed for all different kinds of audiences. So, for instance, if you're going to write a book analyzing the... I'm presently reading a book about the split in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, Tengalai Vardagalai. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I believe it was, stated that the Sri Vaishnava teachings are the Viti Swarup of the Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya. And we had some insights into that last time we were in Sri Rangam with our venerable Lakshmi Kumar Tartacharya speaking on Nama Tattva. And to be quite honest, I thought all of this was brought out by Rupa Goswami, but he was saying the same, Nama, Nami, Abhinna, the name and the name, non-different. The name is the same as the Lord, but more merciful. This is all in Rupa Goswami's Namashtakam, but it's there even previously. But reading this book, I'm understanding, just even at the beginning of it, that practically, well, that may be, that would be disputed to say that there are two Sri Vaishnava philosophies, but there are two major interpretations of it, and ours, our Gauriya Vaishnava teachings, they are the Viti Swarup. The basis of that would be that given by Vedanta Deshika, I would say. But I could see also from reading this book that our own movement is heading for this same kind of thing, in which roughly we can say that there's a party who emphasizes, it's very, very, very big generalization, but one party that emphasizes devotion, and feelings more. And the other says that devotion and feelings, that's all very good, but it has to be based on Shastra. So this split, it's already there. Years ago, Sahotra Swami, I was speaking with him and saying it looks like there's a split coming up. He said it's already there. It's just a matter of time. It'll manifest more and more. So anyway, if for instance one is going to write about, which no one has done so far, as far as I know, to write how the Sri Vaishnava teachings are the basis of Gaudiya teachings, you're going to have to study. You can't just do it off the top of your head. You're going to have to go very deeply into the topics. You're going to have to learn, if you don't know already, you're going to have to learn Sanskrit and Manipravala, which means you should learn Tamil also if you're not Tamil to start with. And so many things, all the highly nuanced points of the differences between the two sampradayas, two branches of the sampradaya. So you're going to have to read, if you know, you're going to have to know your subject matter very well. There are, in writing, there may be works which the writer says, this is an exploratory piece, which could be developed in more detail. That is also there. That can be there. But if you really want to write, and again, it depends the audience you're aiming at. Just like Gokul Chandrabhu here wrote a book, Who is Supreme? Which is fine for the public, giving all evidence from Shastra, Krishna is supreme. But then if you wanted to get into it with a Shaiva scholar, you're going to have to be on a different level altogether. Siddhaputta Prabhu, he said that about this magazine, Origins. He said that's fine for the college students, the average public, but it's not meant for the professor class. You have to go into things much more deeply. So you're going to have to read. A writer has to read. And also reading good writing also helps one to write better. And reading Srila Prabhupada's books is very good for learning how to to convey difficult concepts in very clear language. Okay, Hare Krishna. That's all I have to say for now. I could go into it much more deeply, but Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. How to be a success in everything. Make your life a success. Janma sartha kari. And then what do you do after you make your life a success? Retire. Karo para upakar. Do good for others. If some devotees in our movement criticize, why is anyone writing? Prabhupada already gave everything we need. True, but Prabhupada also wanted his disciples to write. He actually said all his disciples should write something every day. He also wanted them to write, because one thing is there are various realizations of Krishna. The whole world of Vaishnavism is vast, and we've hardly brought out a drop of it. And although Srila Prabhupada's books are all that we need to go back to God, at every line and every word, they could be questioned. We don't read like that, because we read with faith. There's some basic faith. But at every step, it could be questioned and will be questioned. So there is need for a huge area of philosophical writing will be required for a few people. It won't be many. But that will be required. At the present time, we're philosophically, practically defenseless against various people that attack our positions, because we haven't done our work in defending that. There's a lot of work to do, philosophically, and then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to make a book. It would be a massive encyclopedia, Paramarthik Bharata. Exactly what the subject is, I don't know, but if you take, if you, Paramarthik Bharata, spiritual India. So then you have the whole culture, so many holy places. There are some Hindu encyclopedias. Maybe they serve the purpose. Not exactly in the same way that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted. What does he wanted to make a dictionary. The first thing, define the words that we're using. Reading this book on the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, say the way they use certain words is different to the way we use, and maybe different to the standard usage of the way it's used. But within their own circle, they use certain Sanskrit words in a certain way. So when we say Bhagavan, what do we mean exactly? When we say Ishvara, Mayavadi's central point of the Mayavad teachings is about Ishvara, but their understanding and our understanding is completely different. Moksha. How? What is the meaning? Our understanding and their understanding, there's so much difference. So, I'm just giving some examples that there is a need of writing. You may say, well, we don't care about, if they don't want to believe what Prabhupada says, we don't care. Well, we do care. We should care. And if we don't, then it may appear that it may be possible, and this happens with every great acharya, that people come after them and point out, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. And then it's the duty of the disciples in disciplic succession to defend their acharya's position. So that will be there. The fact that, I said this some days ago here in Salem, right? What's the biggest philosophical opposition to ISKCON nowadays? Can't think of much. That's not good. That means we're not doing our work. We should be preaching our philosophy, and then there'll be opposition. Now we public relations ourselves put so much water in the milk, there's only water left. So people who have an allergy to drinking milk, they'll be happy with us. We're not getting our philosophy out. We're distributing books. We're not speaking it. We're not pushing it. There should be philosophical opposition. So I'm just giving some reasons why we should write. Why the fire should be in there. It's not for everyone. It's a specialized thing. But as I was asked to speak on this subject, I'm doing so. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Vanchava kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhyavacha. Patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Hare Krishna.
Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj ki jai.